I'm Dark Journalist. This is part two of my special interview with financial expert Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, in part one, she gave us an overview of what she calls the breakaway civilization and their manipulative role in finance and geopolitics. In this installment, she'll give us a historical perspective on their covert development and her personal battles with them during her time in government. So if you enjoyed part one, as many of you have told me that you did, then you'll find part two even more fascinating. Here we go. Catherine Austin Fitz, Dancing with the Breakaway Civilization. Part two.
I would probably say that slavery is the most profitable business, even more profitable than warfare, because you, oddly enough, you can't get to warfare without slavery. But the most profitable kind of slavery is slavery in which the slave does not know that they are the slave.
Now, Catherine, we're approaching the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. There have been some excellent researchers, and professors, and writers who feel that elements within the establishment and intelligence community caused JFK to be removed for a variety of reasons. Now, how does this relate to the ascendance of the covert groups you've mentioned who've created the breakaway civilization?
JFK assassination was a watershed moment in the American history.
Okay.
It's when the Black Budge Advice basically asserted control.
Yeah.
And from that point on, no one on the overt side of the House could say no to them. In other words, the overt side of the House lost control. And government lost control of the technology.
Yeah.
Because you created a financial mechanism where, with the 47 Act and the 49 Act, the National Security Act and the CIA Act, and then with the decision at the National Security Council to outsource, to use government contracting to outsource the most classified projects to corporations, you created a financial mechanism where private corporations could own and control the most, you know, sensitive national security weaponry and technology, funded completely with government money on a completely non-transparent basis outside of Congress. Congress had no control and jurisdiction, and so you have government money financing private investors controlling and owning the most powerful technology in the world. And that is how you get the breakaway civilization, because the more technology they have, the more they can blackmail the political process into giving them money, you know, and so that is the goal, you know, the drive for the breakaway civilization. So we financed the breakaway civilization, and it was basically theft through the government process, as far as I'm concerned.
And you think this incident 50 years ago with JFK was probably the real turning point in the whole thing?
To me, it was the real turning point, because in my experience, the guys who engineered it were tremendously emboldened by their ability to get away with it.
Yeah.
And then they were, you know, that was followed up with financial fraud, and the ability to get away with that financial fraud shocked and amazed them. I mean, they couldn't believe the extent to which they could steal and steal more. And it's a testimony to how wealthy we are as an economy that they could steal that much, and, you know, it keeps on generating wealth. So I think the JFK, to me, JFK and Iran-Contra were two moments where the power rush went to their heads of what they got away with. And that, you know, up until those times, you heard people say, well, we did these things because it was for the best good of the system. And then suddenly it snaps, and it becomes, you know, it becomes thuggery, it becomes just crime. You know, mm-hmm. The system loses its cultural groundings, and it just gets out of control. So I think And I think understanding the Kennedy assassination on the Salieri Report, we're going to have Peter Janney on that day.
Excellent.
You know who he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. His book, Mary's Mosaic, there's a review up on my blog.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book. I have it.
Absolutely. One of the best books on the Kennedy assassination. And he wrote a movie from it that is never, you know, no, everybody was too scared to touch it, apparently.
Wow.
But he's written a movie, and I read the script, and it's fantastic.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting. You're probably aware of this, but did you know that E. Howard Hunt came out at the end of his life, and when he was summing up the Kennedy assassination, he gave all this information to his son before he died. And one of the things that he gave him was that Cord Meyer was very involved at the tactical level of the assassination, and Cord Meyer being a high-level person in the CIA. And, of course, Mary Meyer was his wife. So I just thought that was very interesting when this guy did the overview on her and how fascinating her relationship with JFK was, that there was this little thing hanging out there about E. Howard Hunt, you know, just out of the blue, mentioning this guy, Cord Meyer, who nobody up to that point had implicated in anything. So I always thought that was very interesting.
One of the most important things in coming clean is we are all walking around in a fantasy that the corruption is in Washington and Wall Street.
Yeah.
We don't see the corruption in our family, in our own business, in our own lives, in ourselves. And one of the beautiful things that Peter does in Mary's Mosaic is he comes clean because he connects it back to his own friends and family and associates in life and faces that in himself. You know, and he comes clean in the process of telling the story. And that's something we all have to do. We all have to realize that. I remember there were so many moments of coming clean as I was going through the litigation because I was sitting, I was living in a beautiful mansion in Washington. I was writing a check on J.P. Morgan Chase, or J.P. Morgan Private Banking. They haven't merged yet, I don't think. And suddenly my hands froze, and I said, why am I banking at the bank that's doing this mortgage fraud? I'm financing the mortgage fraud.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm the corruption. And I said, and that's the first time I ever used the word in my mind. I said, I have to come clean. I have to come clean. And that started a process, and it took me about 2 or 3 years where on every aspect of my transactions, I tried to literally get the corruption out of my money and my time and then do something more positive with it. And it was a very, you know, because it was very complex. Part of the book is to make it a lot more simple than it was when, you know, I was trying to figure it out. And we each have to face this. We're each complicit, and we're pretending that it's far, far away. It's not woven throughout our own lives. And the reality is, you know, this is very intimate.
Yeah.
It's very, very intimate. And having lived through the litigation, I can tell you, you know, you end up with the war moving through your family and friends, you know, or people who you thought were your family and friends. One of my favorite mystery writers is Andrew Vox, and he says, your family is the people who won't turn you in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was watching...
Family-based family really is.
I was watching a documentary on Danny Casolaro.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I just kept going back to Salieri in my mind about these things. And I was thinking there was somebody who was really going for it. You know, he was really telling the real story. And they shut him down really quickly and got him out of the picture.
He, you know, he was involved in trying to figure out the Promise software story. And, you know, our story, we had a similar, you know, you get these entrepreneurs who create a piece of software that is threatening to the central control.
Yeah.
So the folks at Inslaw created the Promise software.
Right.
We created Community Wizard and the loan sale optimization software. There was another guy, I think it was called eGovernment, but who created software to re-engineer government parking ticket programs.
Wow.
He and his girlfriend were burned down in their house. So,
wow.
You know, you had these crazy stories where, you know, a piece of software would threaten the system and ba-boom. you know, you'd get these wild things happening. And Casolaro was a reporter who ran after that one and got killed.
Yeah, well, it's like Gary Webb, you know, it's these people who step forward and do this. And I find it fascinating because they're showing, you know, a lot of courage there. But you see that that idea of the breakaway civilization becomes very real when you see these people bumped off. You know, it goes out of the theoretical, you know. And I'm sure you can see that in your own life, like you were saying, with litigation and things like that.
I think most people don't begin to understand how many people have been killed. Because you can, it's relatively easy to assassinate a person and make it look natural.
Yeah.
You know, so they have a bike accident, they have a car accident, they get fast-acting cancer, blah, blah, blah. The poisoning is off the charts. And if you look at the number, you know, I get very upset when somebody says, why has nobody done anything? Because thousands and thousands of people have risked or given their life to try and stop this.
Right.
And so, you know, the death toll is pretty significant. When I was in Washington, when I was running Hamilton Securities, you know, you had lots of reporters who were keeping death lists on both the Clinton family and the Bush family. You know, how many people had gotten killed this year?
Wow.
And if you do a search for the death list, they're up there.
That's fascinating.
They're quite significant. Yeah. So it's a very dangerous situation, and that's why I think it's much better if each one of us can come clean. I think ultimately it you know, don't stay in a legacy system fighting something that can't get anywhere. Get out in the new and do something positive. And just withdraw, you know, stop. I liken it to a tapeworm. Stop feeding the tapeworm what's good for the tapeworm and bad for you.
Right.
And build your strength back up.
Fantastic.
So don't fight with a parasite. Simply stop feeding it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's how many years you've done Solari now?
I turned operational, Solari operational in 98, but we didn't start the business until 2007. I started doing investment advisory, and then we started the Solari report in 2009, December 2008.
Well, the audio archives in there on the Solari report are absolutely amazing. I recommend it as like the best education someone could get. But
I'm glad you think that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very interesting. Yeah. And every time I go back into them, there's always different areas that you cover that I never had gone to before. And they go far beyond the economic and marketing areas that you have such expertise in. But you go into all these other areas that sort of they come back to money in some interesting way. And I always find that interesting.
Well, I'm trying to get my subscribers to look at their balance sheet and income statement on an integrated fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Just because as you go through the day, you're dealing with everything in an integrated way.
Right.
And your health impacts your finances impact your health. You know, things are integrated and you're walking around the financial system is an ecosystem. It's a living system. So your whole balance sheet and income statement are dynamically interacting with the global balance sheet and income statement. And we tend to, you know, we've been trained to think of these things as separate worlds. You know, here's my life. Here's the financial system over here. You know, I play it like a vending machine where cha-ching, I try and get money, as opposed to, wait a minute, you know, we're swimming in a swimming pool and it's immersive. And how do we, you know, deal with the fact that the water is dirty. Okay.
Right.
So I see it as a dynamic living system, and I'm trying to get you to align your living system with your financial system and use it to get what you want. So to me, money's just a tool. I want you to be successful as you define that, not as I define that. And what we're all trying to figure out is, okay, how can I be successful in a way that builds up the real economy as opposed to tears it down? Because the all real solutions require we're all in the business of building it up, not we're in the business of building it down. Because if we all destroy it, then there's nothing, you know, for anybody.
Right.
And well, government guarantees aren't going to protect us.
Exactly. Well, you're showing a great example of how to do that. and I think it is important.
If I couldn't come clean and do it, then how was I supposed to help anybody else? But I think, you know, what we're trying to do in the Salera report is support what I call the people on the line. These are the people who are, you know, they're, if you look at our subscribers, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're judges, they're teachers, they're professors, they're researchers, they're entrepreneurs, they run the gamut, you know, and we have people, including on the blog, who read this from the library because they're homeless to people who are worth $100 million. It's a very wide. And what's interesting is there is no such thing as the 99% and the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people, from homeless to extremely wealthy, are all deeply committed to freedom.
Wow.
You know, they didn't come to this planet to make money. They came to this planet to be free, to enjoy, and to build something wonderful.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we're just trying to help that person figure out how to do it.
How do you know?
And we're all making it up together.
I gotcha. Well, how do you have your readers and your subscribers, like when you do a show on mind control, for example, which I think is fascinating. It's one of the most fascinating, that and telling the truth, which are, interestingly enough, are both solo shows with no guests. But how do you get people to understand, like, you really can bring them into this totally different realm and it's very powerful information, but they seem to go along with you, which is great.
Well, most of the people who come are curious. In other words, you know, a typical Salera Report subscriber is somebody who has confidence in their intelligence.
Yeah.
And yet they're constantly being told by the media or the people around them, you know, they're feeling that something's wrong. So they're bothered by chemtrails, or, you know, a child gets autism and they start to realize there's something really wrong with the way the medical, you know, world is treating them. You know, something happens that makes them realize, you know, the reality that I see is not the reality I'm being told exists. And so they get a sense of, you know, they feel disturbed. And yet they think, well, am I crazy, or is there something wrong with me? And I don't think so, because, you know, I'm a good person, I'm a smart person. And they start to go into a process where they say, well, let me see what I can find out. And by one form or another, they find us, and we're kind of calm and peaceful. So we're disturbed by the corruption, but my approach is much more like an investment advisor. Okay, so my approach is much more, okay, well, it is what it is, what are we going to do about it? And, you know, so it's a little bit more quiet, and we deal at a much more complex level because your life is complex. You have to deal with it at that level. And so what they come to us and they start to read and listen to the material. So the Dylan Reed story is a perfect example. And they come back and say, oh, you know, guess what? There really is an intentional plan to centralize power. And there really is an intentional plan to finance a media that tricks me and is lying to me.
Right.
That's really true. You know, so they get over that hump and they think, well, that's depressing. What do I do about it? And then it's a matter of, you know, walking through the different modules of, okay, here's what you need to understand. You know, so I was saying in the mind control one, you need to understand this technology exists, because as you're navigating the environment, you're going to run into people who've been mind controlled, who are going to try and trick you, and you need to know that that's real.
Yeah.
Or you watch the school shootings and you need to know it's possible the shooter was a Manchurian candidate. You need to understand that.
Right.
So if you're going to understand your environment, you've got to understand this part of the covert world and how it affects your world. And, you know, that's a journey, Daniel. They can't just download that in one day.
Yeah.
It's a journey of sort of, you know, I always liken our world to Disney World. We have the upstairs and then we have the downstairs. You know, there are people downstairs. And so we're trying to walk people around the upstairs and the downstairs and help them see the connection between them so that they get a good map. And that takes time. And it's a dynamic process because each one of them is unique. Each one of them has a different purpose. Each one of them has to fit it into their own lives. So it takes time, but it's a journey. And what happens over many, many years is our subscribers are some of the smartest people in the world. You should come if we ever do a lunch in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
We did lunch.
Yeah.
These people, and you would never, you know, these are people who have very high level, impressive positions. Sometimes you would never know, you know,
they're sort of in the closet in a way, right?
You know, they're very personable and well-dressed and professional and whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a successful partner, a law firm, and you would never guess what they know. And they are, some of them are able to use this information to great use to protect it. I mean, they use it for risk management and they use it very smartly. So it's a, you know, they're a very, you know, I wouldn't say covert, but they're surprisingly savvy about staying invisible.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably a smart move in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it is nice to know that they're out there. That's for sure.
Oh, there are a lot of them.
That's fantastic. What about Let's Go to the Movies? I have to end on this. You, first okay. of all, you gave me two of the greatest movies, Public Enemy or no, Enemy of the State and
Enemy of the State.
And They Live.
They Live.
They Live is the greatest.
What I find, you know, and this is true for our subscribers. Our subscribers are busy people.
Yeah.
They do not have, when I first, during the litigation, I said, look, I've got to understand what's really going on. And I sat down and I read in a period of 3 years about 1,000 books. And I'm a speed reader, so I read about 1,000 books. I watched hundreds of DVDs, and I had to digest a lot of complex information that was very poorly written, was full of anger and all sorts of psychic garbage, and was very hard to go through, you know, because you had a lot of angry people writing about their little thing.
Yeah.
And I said, look, it is not a plan to ask busy professional people to read this much stuff. So how do I teach someone about the economy? How do I teach them? And what I realized was, you know, it's all in the movies. It's all in the movies. If you want to understand the American economy as of 1980, just sit down one Saturday, get out popcorn, get out, you know, tea, iced tea, whatever it is, get out beer and watch Godfather 1, Godfather 2, Godfather 3. There it is. I mean,
wow.
There's your U.S. economy as of 1979. So what? Or Syriana. Syriana is one of the best movies about the global, you know, investment and economic model. Anyway, so it's all in the movies. And what I realized is, if I could come up with movies that would teach people little aspects that they needed to understand, and be able to do it in a form that was entertaining.
Yeah.
So. You know, we encourage something called Solaris Circle. So everybody gets together once a month. You watch a movie or a documentary that's entertaining and interesting, and then you talk about it. You have a potluck dinner. It's fun.
Great idea.
You know, and right. And so you can build your education without, and, you know, a lot of truth can be told in a fictionalized form that people aren't comfortable telling in a documentary form for reasons of criminal and legal liabilities. So, to me, the movies is a great way to come together and talk about this. And, you know, there's been an explosion, thanks to Netflix and the internet, just an explosion of documentaries that are available that are fantastic.
Yeah.
So
now, what do you see coming up for you and the Solari Report in the future?
You know, what I want to do is do a lot more video on the Solari Report and do small things.
Yeah.
I worked very closely with Foster and Kimberly Gamble as they made Thrive.
Yeah. Excellent movie.
And yeah, it's an excellent movie. And, but here's the thing. I love money. I'm, you know, the thing I do every day is I manage money.
Right.
And that's what I love to do. I love to teach people about money. I love to help people learn how to govern and control their own money and use money as a tool. I love to help people make money. I love, you know, so I want to spend the rest of my life managing money.
You've spoken about how there's a great deal of entrainment technology being used by companies and the media. How can you reach people who are in this kind of matrix reality and can't fathom the corruption that's going on around them?
Well, here's what people, I think what the kind of people that I'm trying to appeal to, you know, they don't want to look at the dirty parts. What they want to do is they They want to enjoy their life. They want to have a great life. And so they need a certain amount of intention of learning and understanding this stuff so you can understand your world and reverse engineer it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, for example, one of the businessmen I work with very closely, he came to me because he didn't want to get tricked again. He said, you know, the last time I didn't succeed the way I wanted to because the bankers got the better of me. So I need you to teach me how the world works so that next time when I play the game, I'll play to win and I won't get tricked. So he's a really positive guy. He wants to get something. He's a very positive business. He wants to get something positive done. So you want to orient it. You know, we've got good guys and we've got bad guys, and we want to orient it so the good guys are successful and have enough fun so the bad guys say, well, maybe I'm going to join them. You know, maybe they are having more fun now. So maybe let's come over to their side. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's very interesting.
It's playing to win, but in a way that attracts more people into the playing to win camp.
Yeah. Yeah. I can appreciate that. Well, I think it's actually a really good approach because in many ways, you're going to need people who are not familiar with the material in a sense, and you're sort of bringing them into this world. They might be coming in through economy and finance originally, but you're giving them something much bigger, which is really going to help them in the long run. Because I think
you know how we always close down the – we always end the salary report. I always say, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you need to start.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's a great line. It's great. It's like your Catherine punchline right there.
Well, you know, I grew up in a world where conspiracies was the basic operating modus operandi. And, you know, you got together, you saw what was going on, you came up with a plan, you figured out how to make it good for you, and then off you went. And conspiracies was how we operated. There was nothing wrong with it. Everybody did it. So
right.
My attitude is, what's the problem? Let's have more.
Well, absolutely. It's fascinating. I also think they've been able, through the media, to peg conspiracy in a particular way, which is very interesting. They've kind of ghettoized the term in a very interesting fashion. But I found something, it was like a documentary from the early 90s, and they were already doing that then. You know, so they've been busy for a long time.
Yeah. Well, they're making unfashionable the very thing you could do that would give you power.
Yes. That's true.
Yes.
And when you talk about, you know, you've mentioned space and UFOs and things like that, and you've gone into it. And I know a lot of people who are, you know, in different professional fields who talk a lot about that, but they are very guarded in certain company about talking about it. And what I find interesting about this is I think this is a big one that needs to change. And so I think you're very far ahead of the curve when you talk about this. Because
here's why you have to talk about it. If you divide our economy, you know, America breaks down into 3,100 counties.
Yeah.
And if you look at the economy in every one of those counties, one of the reasons that it's not healthy is because of the stress that the black budget is putting on it.
Uh-huh.
And so before you can turn that around, you've got to say, well, what is this black budget and why? You know, why is it so powerful and why is it draining us and how do we deal with that? And it's very centralized. So, you know, one county can't get out, you know, because they can't, if one can get out, they can all get out. So the central powers won't let anybody out. And so if a group of soccer moms can't back the drug dealers out of their neighborhood because the drug dealers are financing James Bond, and if James Bond's money gets cut off, you know, the black helicopters come down on their heads, then we need to all talk about, well, what is the black budget and what's the problem? I wrote an article at the beginning of the year called Coming Clean from the Fiscal Cliff.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I talk about is what are the systemic problems with reengineering the federal budget? And I talk about the black budget and these issues. I list all the systemic problems. And one very much is, you know, we have a very destructive economic model, and a lot of it is because of the black budget. And if you're going to turn around the economy, we're going to find a way of generating income and equity for millions of people across the country. We have to bring transparency and find a way to deal with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to, when you go about that quest, nothing can be off the table in terms of subject matter that you'll deal with. And I think that's where your approach is really good.
I'm careful when you say everything has to be on the table, because there is so much disinformation.
Uh-huh.
You know, that when you put everything on the table, you can drag in a lot of garbage.
Uh-huh.
So that's the challenge. How do we be open to reality and the truth without, you know, disappearing down the rabbit hole of disinformation?
Right. So what kind of a filter would you use, I guess,
right,
is the question. You know, but it's fascinating. One of the guys I read a lot, and you had him on your show, and I was like, this is amazing that you're having this guy, and it was Joseph Farrell. And
I love Joseph.
Unbelievable, right? And
a brilliant man. Brilliant.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I see him and you in a very similar light, because I think he's taking these very kind of, you know, off-the-table subject matter and bringing it in and using his intellectual gymnastics to get around it and bring it in. But he's doing it, I think it takes a lot of courage to approach things that way. And
right.
But you, in this field that you're in, bringing in somebody who's doing that with the topic of UFOs and things like that, or I think you had another, what's his name, Richard Dolan. You had him
Richard
also.
Dolan.
Yeah, who's a terrific lecturer and writer. So you've really, you know, but you're bringing these topics in a way that I think people can absorb them, and I think that that's
right.
Crucial. But right. It is also, you know, you'd say it's not exactly middle-of-the-road strategy. That's kind of risky in a way, and I kind of like that you've done it that way.
Okay, so let me say this one thing about risk.
Yeah.
When you're in the money business, you have to deal with reality, or reality will deal with you. You can't afford to pretend that the official reality is true,
because
uh-huh. You're talking about real money.
Yeah.
Okay? So my approach is, I'm interested in reality because I deal with real money, and I want to protect your money. And I want to help you protect your money, which means we need to deal with reality. And so there's, you know, if we're at a cocktail party and we want to pretend that the official reality is the official reality, that's fine. But when it comes to managing your money, that's a risk we cannot afford to take. A lot of people lost money on Madoff or on 2008 because they were pretending the official reality was true when it came to their money. And that's where the rubber is going to meet the road here, because when you invest money, whether it's your time or your money, you know, you're dealing with risk. And there is nothing riskier than being oblivious to reality, when, in fact, there are very powerful people roaming around trying to steal your money. So the reason I keep trying to introduce things which are outside the official reality is I'm not trying to introduce everything outside the official reality. I'm trying to introduce everything you need to know if you're going to protect your time and your money.
I see.
So there's a very practical goal here. And you know, if you have two strategies that I believe are effective. One is you can say, I'm going to suck up to the tapeworm, and the tapeworm's going to pay me a lot of money, and so I don't need to know reality. I just need to be really good at kissing the tapeworm. That's one strategy. The other is, you know, I'm gonna go out into the wilderness, and I'm going to survive on my own, and I'm not going to kiss up to the tapeworm. But if that's the case, I really need to know what's reality. So it's interesting. If you go to, you know, the poor neighborhoods and go to the really great churches in the poor neighborhoods in this country, what you'll discover is the people in those churches have much more knowledge than the middle class about what's really going on.
Uh-huh.
Because they live on the edge. They can't afford not to know. And in fact, they do a lot of the jobs where you get access to that information. They get into people's homes.
Right.
And they share that knowledge, and they've built up that knowledge, and that's how they survive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we can, you know, we can suck up to the tapeworm, and that strategy will work if you're good at it. Or we can get a good map of reality and start rebuilding the real economy. What you can't afford to do in this environment is be in the middle of the road. You know, the people in the middle of the road are getting killed. So you've got to go to one or the other. And what I'm trying to do is help build. You know, I'm not, as you can tell, I'm not very good at kissing the taper.
Right. Well, it's the financial work that's is the anchor then for you to be able to bring in all these other things. And you don't sort of get overwhelmed by having these other topics because you have this anchor which says, I need to, for the sake of reality,
right,
bring in, get to the real bottom line.
Right. My anchor is, how can a family of four living anywhere in the country, what information do they need to be successful in this environment if they're going to try and live an authentic life? So that always grounds me back to what's useful for them.
Yeah, I can see that. Thank you for joining me for part two of my interview with Catherine Alston Fitz. You can find more interviews and special reports at darkjournalist.com or youtube.com/darkjournalist. See you soon.